and welcome to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. I'm Chris Austin.
And I'm Luke Parker.
And this is a podcast where we talk about what's showing at Phoenix Cinema in Finchley, North London. And today we are talking about Peter Cataneo's new film, The Penguin Lessons.
Yep, that's right. Today we're delving into Peter Cataneo's new film, a heartfelt adaptation of Tom Michel's memoir starring Steve Coogan as a newly arrived English teacher in 1976 Argentina. Set against the backdrop of a military coup, the film intertwines personal transformation with political unrest. Michel's life takes an unexpected turn when he rescues an oil-soaked penguin in Uruguay, whom he names Juan Salvador. Unable to return the penguin to the wild, he brings it back to Argentina, where it becomes a symbol of hope and resilience amid the country's turmoil. As Michel bonds with his students and navigates the turbulent political landscape, the film highlights the power of unexpected friendships and the resilience found in the most unlikely of places. So, Chris, how did you find The Penguin Lessons?
Thank you, Luke. I really enjoyed this.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was such a warm, gentle, and lovely movie. What about you?
Yeah, you know, I completely agree with that. There's something I find really jarring, though, about watching Steve Coogan take on these more, like, dramatic roles.
Okay.
Essentially, you know, this is a comedy, but the comedy is a bit more subtle to what I'm used to seeing Steve Coogan in, you know.
Sure.
When I see Steve Coogan, I see Alan Partridge, so it's a little bit jarring for me.
That's fascinating, yeah, because I don't really know his Alan Partridge. I actually don't think I've ever seen any Alan Partridge.
You need to check it out. I think it's hilarious.
Really?
Such a great character. Such a great character. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. And then he's that's what he's known for, right? Is his really outwardly comedic work. I think, yeah. I mentioned to you I'd seen The Parole Officer or something.
Sure.
Once.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't think it was too good, but yeah, it's like really goofy, really slapstick, silly stuff. And
yeah, the TV, yeah. The Alan Partridge TV show is exactly like that. It's very in your face, very slapstick, very exaggerated comedy. Still with like, it's very like British humor, of course, but
yes.
And I guess those, this film, you know, I definitely would class this as a very British comedy.
Sure. Yeah.
Quite understated. But yeah, I agree with you. It's a really, really nice film. It tries to hit a lot of like emotional notes that I think it doesn't quite succeed with to the extent I think it wants to. But still behind it, and I completely agree with you. I really enjoyed this.
I think that's so right. It does try sometimes, and I think you can feel the trying at times, you know. But it does hit more often than it misses, and the misses are fine, because in my opinion it's like, you know what, the movie's heart is in the right place.
Yeah.
It's heartfelt. It may hit some well-known and cliched beats, but it hits them well. So that's okay.
Yeah, but there's definitely a lot of cliches, and it's quite nice to watch a film like this where it feels quite, let's say, not melodramatic. And I'm kind of making this comparison. I'm not saying that I'm Still Here is melodramatic, because that's like, that's not what I'm trying to say here, but it's where the drama is very elevated and the stakes are very, very high. And that's kind of a lot of the drama in I'm Still Here is quite similar to some of the dramas we have in The Penguin Lessons, where it's like set against this military coup and people are being like just taken away off the streets. It definitely never reaches the dramatic highs of films like I'm Still Here. But that's kind of quite nice in a way, because what the film does do well is kind of balance that element. You know, this drama, this political unrest that's going on in the background, with kind of the light-hearted nature of what the hell's this penguin doing in a school?
Yeah, you know, it's like... it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I think maybe you could compare this movie to many others mm-hmm. that have come before it. Certainly, maybe it's inspired by them. But yeah. the one thing this movie has that the others don't is the fucking penguin. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That's what distinguishes this above all others, is that there's a penguin walking around this movie and a really lovely, actually, relationship,
yeah, yeah.
friendship with it. Yeah, it's funny. You know, I was a bit hesitant before I saw it because I actually read a bad review of this movie before I saw mm-hmm. it. And maybe it wasn't bad, but it was just kind of like shrug. It was like, eh. And I just don't agree with it because, yeah, you can fault the movie its flaws, and there are some. But I think to be nitpicky about it, you know, to fault anything is being nitpicky. I mean, we can certainly do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was surprised. It actually surprised me at how much I enjoyed it. Let's talk about those moments that you just want to get out of the way, the moments that do feel forced. That moment early in the film where they meet the women in the club.
Sure.
The way that all goes down is, I was like, oh, come on. I mean, you know, Steve Coogan's there with his, that guy, that other character.
Who
I really like in the film, is really funny. They don't even try. They're just there, and then these two beautiful Argentinian women approach them.
Yep. I completely agree. Yeah, completely agree.
Okay, yeah.
And then she just disappears off into the night, and he's like stuck with this penguin, and it all feels, I mean, obviously, considering it's based on a memoir, and like there's supposed to be this element of realism to it, it does feel forced and a bit like, well, what was the point of that?
Yes, agreed. And it gives off this impression of like, oh, wow, Steve Coogan is such a nice guy. He's so nice, you know, because he takes her back. They go for a walk on a beach. They've been up all night. They find the penguin soaked in oil. She convinces him to take it home and clean it. And then they start to make out with each other, and then she's like, oh, you know what, I actually can't do this. I thought I could, but I can't. I'm married. And then he goes, okay. And then there's a nice comedic bit where he goes, you know, I'm open to that. And then she goes, sorry. And he's like, it's fine. She goes, I hope you're not upset. He goes, I'm not upset.
He has every right to be pissed off in that moment.
Sure, absolutely. But she gets ready, and then she's like, she blows him a kiss and gives him this look like, you are so nice. And it's like, it feels like the movie's really driving the point home. It's yeah. like, okay. And then she leaves, and like you said, Luke, vanishes from the movie. Like, that's her part yeah. done.
Yeah.
And it feels, and then you get that, you know, this obligatory shot where he's sitting on the bathtub, and then the penguin walks into frame, and then he goes, wait, what about the penguin? And you know, it's like, yeah, it feels really... So I didn't buy their relationship at all.
Well, I guess I didn't even really have a relationship. I just didn't buy that whole setup yeah. and scenario. It's just, yeah. it was a little bit ridiculous. I do agree with that.
Absolutely. And then there's a couple of moments in this movie where soldiers or security hold a gun on Coogan's character. And those moments also feel really forced. I never believed anyone would shoot. And they also holster or lower their weapons far too easily.
Yeah, this is what I meant earlier when I was like, there's never really any stakes in this film. Like, we know how it's going to end, really, don't we? And I totally agree with that. Like, the one moment that sticks out to me is when he's thinking of taking it back to the zoo, and they go to the zoo, and then he gets stopped yes. as he's walking to yeah. the zoo by these two soldiers.
Right.
Nothing happens. It doesn't tell us anything. It's just, oh yeah, there's a coup going on, basically.
Yeah, exactly. And even the very start, he shows up in a taxi at this school, and... you know, a bomb blast goes off nearby. Everyone gets a bit nervous, and security hold their gun on him. And yeah. that's like an oh shit moment. And then he just goes, I'm the English teacher. I'm the new English teacher. And he, you know, this security guard just thinks about it for a second, then nods and holsters his gun. And it's like, oh, okay, that was easy. You know, it's like, we don't, but the movie doesn't need that. We don't need guns held in order to make this exciting. We don't need it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And when they do try and like force these moments into the film, one of the reasons this does feel a bit lackluster is that, you know, this is clearly a pretty low budget film. You know, every year we get a couple of films like this where like chuck in a bunch of English actors and a pretty safe, heartwarming story, a bit of a tearjerker, you know, every year, pretty low budget. We get a lot of films like this. And when they try and force in moments like this, they don't achieve what they're trying to achieve. And they just kind of accentuate the fact that, okay, this is a bit of a low budget thing we're seeing here. I don't even know why they bother trying, basically.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, except for one conversation at the cafe or the diner, late in the movie, where he's speaking to a guy that may be a government employee or whatever, about someone who's been taken, that felt genuinely threatening. That was such a really well acted scene, and I thought, that's all you need is just good performances, good dialogue. We don't need the whole draw guns, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that was definitely probably one of, if not the standout scene for me. Wow. You know, I really felt that's what that scene is what the film was building up to, and it was kind of Steve Coogan's character having the chance to, you know, redeem himself and his courage after like events from earlier on in the film.
Yes.
So I really did like that scene as well. In terms of parts that were forced, one that kind of stood out to me as well is quite a sensitive moment, and I do understand why they include it, but it's where Steve Coogan's character, he starts to reveal a bit of his backstory to the Penguin and to the other characters, and I just feel like that element is that kind of emotional part is really forced and also a little bit unnecessary.
What, the revealing of the backstory itself or how it was executed?
I think both, to be honest.
Okay.
I do think both. But yeah, you know, this, like I said, this is a good film, but it's definitely not a perfect film. It's not a great film. You know?
For sure. It's not. Yeah, I agree with that. But, you know, there's two moments. There's this ongoing running gag where people find themselves opening up to the Penguin, which I actually really like. I think that works.
Same.
But then there's also that other moment where he's having dinner with, you know, the maid and her family, and he reveals more then. Any difference for you there with those two scenes?
No, that was the same for me. Like,
I think
they were both forced, personally. I just think it wasn't a necessary element to the film. I feel like we already had enough weight to Coogan's character.
I see.
That just felt cliche, the fact that, you know, he's now got this trauma, basically.
Right. Whereas it's okay for him to have the trauma and carry it. Just don't, you can already tell there's trauma. We don't need to have it spelled out for
us. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I never thought about that actually as being one of the forced moments, but that's very interesting. Yeah. It makes sense.
I'm sure for a lot of people it was quite a touching moment, but I don't know, for me it just was a bit predictable.
Okay.
You know, because it is hinted that he has, like, as you just said, it is hinted that, like, he's carrying this baggage, you know. And I just didn't feel it was necessary, you know, the way that they approached it.
To spell it out, yeah. Well, on that, what did you think of the performances in the film?
They were good. I mean, like I said before, I never quite get fully comfortable watching Steve Coogan in these kind of roles. but I thought everyone else was, you know, pretty great. I don't know the actress of, I've got it up here. I think it's Vivian Elieba. She plays the
maid.
Yeah, the older.
She's
the older
great.
Maid.
She's yeah,
really great.
Yeah, and then, I agree.
Jonathan Pryce as well. I thought he plays one of the more comedic roles in the film, and he just does a really nice job. It's really nice seeing him on the screen.
Fucking love Jonathan Pryce. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you?
Yeah. Well, you know, and that's the thing. So I, again, not knowing Coogan off of his earlier comedic work, I really thought he was quite lovely in this. I really bought him as he really comes across as this intelligent, but belligerent man who's been closed off.
Very dry, very English.
Dry, very English. And yeah, really enjoyed that. It's such a lovely part to play. And I think he pulled it off, yeah, really, really well. And that goes, yeah, I think the performances by everyone else in the movie, it's a great ensemble cast.
Even the kids, I thought, were pretty good. Pretty
even
viable.
The kids. Yeah. Yes, even the kids. Agreed. There's another kind of cringe forced moment at the end where we cut to a kid who goes, it's a metaphor, and I was Jesus.
Yeah, that was a bit much.
But you know, again, being nitpicky, the performances are great. The performance of the penguin is great, you know, performance in quotation marks. They do as good a job as possible of giving it a bit of character.
Bit of personality,
Yeah.
I wonder if they use one penguin. I wonder if, like, because, you know, when they do animals in films, they usually have a couple.
Swap
them out.
It's a great question, actually. I don't know.
But yeah, I
agree. At one point, I was thinking, is this CGI? And I was like, no, it's not CGI.
Because I know if it was CGI in a film of on this level with this budget, you'd be able to tell.
You would tell. I've got to say my favorite scene is it's a moment where the kids are all lying down in the classroom while the penguin walks among them and Coogan recites a beautiful poem. I thought that was such a lovely and well executed moment.
Yeah, I completely agree. It's really nice. And just in general, the whole way Coogan's relationship with his student changes and with the penguin, it's really great. And I've seen people compare it to Dead Poets Society, which I think is quite funny.
I see why, for sure.
All the classroom scenes are pretty great, I think.
Yeah, agreed. Who would have thought that you could make Dead Poets Society just that little bit better by having a penguin in it? Who would have what did you think of the score? Did you notice the score at all?
Honestly, no, I actually didn't.
Oh, okay.
Why did you? Was it much stand out for you?
Yeah, it actually really did stand out. Yeah, it's by Federico Jucid. Never heard of him, but he's an Argentinian composer, which obviously makes him the ideal choice for a movie set in Buenos Aires. I thought there were moments where it just sounded really, really beautiful, really lovely. It's a very simple, you know, it's a lot of piano strings, that kind of thing.
Okay, great.
But I noticed it, yeah. For sure.
I feel like that's something I need to get better at, is when I'm like quite invested in the film, that sometimes the score can like go over my head a bit and I don't notice it unless it's like really stand out.
You might be complimenting it there.
True.
Yeah, because if you're that invested in the film and it's doing a very subtle and just supporting it, maybe that's, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I suppose.
That's a good thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. So before we move on to... So our recording got interrupted by some technical issues. So now I've got no fucking idea how long this episode's going on for.
Almost half an hour.
We'll get to the end of this thing. But I wanted to ask you before we move on to pairings, do you consider this to be a white savior movie?
I hadn't really thought about that. I mean, what jumped straight to my head is a no.
Okay.
But I guess I do see the argument for it. I don't really see what him being white's got anything to do with it. It's not like he's gone in and he's like solved and made like any significant difference really, to the political situation and to how people were being treated at this time. It's really just this one specific girl who, you're right, it is a hard question to it's a hard question. But I think it would be a no from me. What about you?
Really hard question. I think that was part of the middling review I read of it. That was their issue with it. And on the one hand, I see their point, like you're saying, yes, we're focusing on an English white character, but placing them into the middle of this Argentinian political conflict without really exploring their side of things, just focusing on his story. So I see that, and yet I absolutely get your point as well in that he doesn't
There's not much
affect.
savioring going on, really.
Right, who is he saving? Yes, who is he saving? I mean, maybe yes, you could say the pupils, but I don't know.
It's never really that clear how much influence he has on this woman being released at the end, is it? That's the
And
problem.
that's it. And I think that is why I love that scene that we spoke about so much between him trying his best to influence, a government official to release someone that they've taken.
Because the
What I
outcome's very
love,
vague. The outcome's very
yeah,
vague, yeah.
the outcome is for a movie that it can at times feel so manufactured and so like forced into cliched beats. What I love about that scene is there's no savior outcome to it whatsoever. In fact, he's kind of told, you better fuck off away from me
Yeah,
right
literally.
now. And he runs terrified. So yeah, I really thought that was so strong. And then I think that the ending of the movie, the final shot before we cut to black, is so beautiful in what's happening in this exchange of life and death. But like you said, in a way that probably has no bearing on anyone's actions. It's just that, a natural circumstance of things. Really, really
Yeah,
nice.
that's very well put. One more thing that I really liked was the when the credits start, well, just before the credits roll, I suppose, and it says this was based on a memoir, and like this is how the story came about, and how the author found this old tape of the penguin swimming in the
Oh
pool,
shit,
and
yeah.
they play that old film footage of the real penguin swimming in the pool. I thought it was so lovely, and the reason I think that bit had a quite a big impact on me is because I didn't know throughout the entire film that any of this happened. I thought this was fully fictional.
Oh, right. I think I'm with you. I mean, when it says based on a memoir or based on a true story, you kind of have to take that with a pinch of salt as well. I mean, it's like, just how much is
Yeah, I'm
it?
sure there were changes. Like, for example, from what I had read before this call, like apparently the real Michelle actually wanted to keep the penguin. He wasn't
Oh, the
spending
whole
all this time
time.
trying to get rid of it, basically. Yeah. But like films like, okay, I'm comparing to I'm Still Here Again, but I know that's a true story. So as I'm watching it, I'm thinking, well, this all actually happened, and I feel like that makes your experience a bit different.
Oh, I see. I see. Oh, that's interesting because I think I watched it knowing it was based on a true story. But again, it's like, yeah, but I honestly don't trust that anymore. I mean, there are some films like the Coen brothers do it where they go based on a true story, but the whole point is that it's not.
Yeah, sure.
But yes, I agree. That post-credits moment was a lovely. Yeah, it just connects you with the film and you think about. Yeah, the this actually probably happened and these connections between people were made. And it's just, that's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Let's go to pairings.
Okay.
I'm going to go first because one, I just couldn't think of one.
Oh, no, really?
Until like an hour before this call. And then two, I finally just threw one in there and it's so lazy and boring because we've spoken about it constantly throughout this call.
Oh, no.
But
okay.
I'm still here. You know, it was either that or Dead Poets Society, but I'd already chosen that one for the holdovers back in the day. So, yeah. I don't even need to explain why we've spoken about it.
Sure.
You know, it's the whole background, the political crisis of the movie, the dictatorship. But obviously that is a way more focused, intense, haunting, tragic story being told, whereas this is just lightly, you know, touched on.
Yeah, nice. I think that's totally fair. I think
what's yours, man?
I went in a bit of a different direction for my pairing, whereas yours is a bit more like associated with the political issues at the time. I went for a bit more of the relationship between the man and the animal.
Okay.
And my pairing's actually with a documentary that came out in 2020, and it's My Octopus Teacher.
Interesting. Okay.
Have you seen it?
No.
So it's about this diver, or this documentary filmmaker. He's a diver, and he, over the course of like a year, he builds up this relationship with an octopus who he like goes and visits and records the octopus living its life and like the turmoil of its life and how it has to survive and all the ups and downs and all the dangers. And
I've seen this.
Oh, you have seen
yes,
it?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
So, but the reason I chose it is not only is it about like this relationship between the man and the animal, but there's quite this big reflection on how in My Octopus Teacher, this part of his life and his relationship with the octopus and this whole thing that he's trying to do with like going to see it every day and filming it and the whole experience kind of affects and changes his relationship with his family and how he sees the world around him. And I think it's quite similar to in this film how when the penguin comes in, it kind of changes not just Steve Coogan's character but kind of the whole school, and he's almost like a vessel of hope, I suppose, and a vessel of joy for all these people.
Oh dude, what a pairing. Honestly, just forget I said anything. Yeah, that's lovely. Oh, I love that so much. Yeah. Wow, yeah, great pairing.
So you have
great
seen it.
Yeah, and as you were describing it, I was like, yeah, all of a sudden the synapse is just fired in my mind. I was like, oh my God, yes, I remember seeing it. It's set in South Africa.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he just documents himself building this relationship with this octopus. Isn't it such a sweet, incredible film?
Won an Oscar, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Won an Oscar. Well, there you go. I mean, yeah, then deservedly so. That is that's great, and a great recommendation too. Yeah,
yeah,
highly
yeah.
recommend people see this. Ooh, lovely. All right. Well, cool. All right. I guess we'll leave it there on this hour and a half episode or something. I don't know. All right. Sounds good. Cool. But thank you, sir.
No, thank you very much. Thank you.
And I'll see you on the next one.
See you on the next one.
Thank you for listening, everybody. Special thanks to Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger, as always. You can find more of his music on stefan-krieger.com, and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. Head to the Phoenix Cinema and watch The Penguin Lessons. We highly recommend it. It is worth watching and worth discussing. And then after you've done that, you can rate, like, and subscribe to this podcast. How about that? That's a good idea. Go and watch the film at the Phoenix Cinema, and I'll see you there.